This is Amber Ray.
And Rusty Tanton.
And you're listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network, the show focused on all things Atlanta and sometimes elsewhere.
Grace Buford is a Metro Atlanta musician and music teacher who plays folk music in venues around the city, as well as in Second Life under her alter ego Cylindrian. I interviewed her last Saturday, June 7, 2008, at Java Monkey in Decatur. I'll play this interview in two parts with a musical interlude featuring a pair of Grace's songs. In the first half, which lasts about 14 minutes, we discuss her music career and the differences between playing in real venues versus virtual venues. In the second half, which lasts about 16 minutes, we continue that discussion and also talk about legal issues in the music industry, marketing on Twitter and MySpace, and teaching music. Enjoy! Performed all over Atlanta, correct? Many different venues, and you also perform in Second Life under your avatar, Cylindrian, which also is your Twitter name.
Yes.
All these other
was my Yahoo name until I forgot my password.
So, how long have you been performing, first of all?
Performing, I did my first open mic about 4.5 years ago, and then started playing open mics like 4 or 5 nights a week, and then I found Second Life and started playing music in Second Life, and most of the time in real life I play coffee houses and cafes, a few bars, and some restaurants, but I prefer cafes.
What are some of the venues around Atlanta that you've played at?
Let's see, I played at East Point Corner Tavern. Let's see, Kavarna in Decatur, Red Light Cafe, lots of coffee houses, Caribou Coffees. I did a tour of Caribou Coffees for a while, and they were in Snellville and Atlanta and Marietta.
I was born in Marietta.
I played the Three Bears Cafe up at... I guess the bar performance area is called the Bear Cave. So I played there. Nice stage. I know there's more, but they're not coming into my head. Oh, Swallow at the Hollow in Roswell.
Swallow at the Hollow. That's interesting. What would you say your favorite venue around Metro Atlanta is and why?
My favorite... I have two favorites, actually. Kavarna in the Oakhurst part of Decatur, and the Red Light Cafe are my favorites.
Okay, what is it about those that are really nice?
Well, Kavarna, I like the atmosphere. I like the food is really good. The sound is getting better. I think it has a special place in my heart because I started playing there when they were just starting to do music on Saturday nights. Now they do music Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So they're becoming well known in that neighborhood as having music 4 nights a week. And the owner's just great. He treats the musicians well. I've watched their sound came from playing in a little corner with a PA that will on stands to playing in a more open area with the speakers mounted in the ceiling, and it's gotten a lot better there, but I just like the neighborhood too.
So, okay, we actually arranged this interview on Twitter, which Twitter's become kind of a neat thing. How were you introduced to Twitter with all the airplane noise in the background?
I was introduced to Twitter, I think it was by, I honestly can't remember. I heard it from somebody who heard it from somebody else, and then I think it may have been actually Eric Rice. I think I had read something about Eric Rice, and he said something about Twitter, and I was like,
Eric does Twitter. I want to do Twitter.
So I think that's probably how it was.
So aside from just like us arranging this interview here and things, like, have you met other people on Twitter that maybe you wouldn't have met otherwise, or have people shown up to your gigs, your concerts?
Well, yeah. Actually, I do remember now. It was my friend. It was my friend Mark, who lives in Taiwan. He is the one that told me about Twitter while using Skype. That's what it was. Yeah. And I think he heard about it because of Eric Rice. But there are a few people in the Metro Atlanta area that use Twitter that keep saying they're going to come to my shows, but they haven't made it yet.
Haven't made it out yet.
And they know who they are.
So you also play, how were you introduced to Second Life? Because you also play, in addition to playing around Metro Atlanta and playing, you also travel all over the country occasionally too, don't
yes.
you?
Yeah.
And so in addition to that, you also play gigs in Second Life. Can you tell us about that? Because that's interesting.
Well, the trips actually have come about because of friends that I've made in Second Life. They're just like any other business trip. I get hired to come in and play an event or some party in real life that we broadcast into Second Life as well. And I try to get my expenses covered. Mm-hmm. I usually have transportation and lodging taken care of because I stay with my friends. Mm-hmm. And they're just, talk about Southern hospitality all over the country. It's amazing. But it's so nice to know that I'm in a safe environment and I'm with people that care about me and that really believe in what I do, and they love my music and they want to share it. And so that's the nice thing. All of that comes about because of those relationships developed in Second Life from doing performances in Second Life. But what I like to do are the shows that showcase not only the venue that I'm playing in the real world, but also show Second Life to those people that are there in the real world, whether it be a projector screen or people walking by and looking at my laptop and my avatar playing.
What attracted you to Second Life?
The idea that I could reach a worldwide audience from my home studio. As I'm just sitting there playing and practicing and whatever, I can broadcast that practice out, and other people can just, I can let people know what I'm doing, and they come in if they have the time, you know, and listen. And then that's how it started, was just I saw it as a way of, a new way of marketing in real time, and each performance is like an interactive website visit. So my avatar is a walking website. Everywhere she goes, she's a website, because all of my information is associated with her. And so when people talk to her, they're actually talking to the person who runs that website. I am the musician. Oh my God. Yeah. So I just think that idea was really huge to me. And it's not about developing a persona, it's not about developing a character or a role. It's about being myself and showing the world that, you know, this is me and this is what I do. And a lot of people seem to dig it.
I know you mentioned that some of the out of town trips have come because of Second Life. I saw on your blog, for example, that you were called by MTV recently.
Yeah.
What was that about?
Okay, that was the MTV spot was because when I first joined Second Life, I was sleepless one night, and at 4 a.m. I got a notice that somebody named Takamura Keiko was playing music from Japan. So I teleported over to listen to her, and I was blown away. The girl is so great. She just writes some great music. So I messaged her, and she and I began talking and began this friendship. And it turns out that she suffered from terrible stage fright and some social anxiety. And she didn't want to play in front of people, but she felt safe playing in Second Life in front of people. So at the Second Life Community Convention in San Francisco back in 2006, I got to meet her. And she's young. Like now I think she's 24 years old. And MTV picked her up to do a show or to do a what's new in the music, underground music. Mm-hmm. And so they did an article on her and Frog Marlowe in Second Life. Well, the producers of that spot loved her music so much that they wanted to follow her some more. So she applied for MTV's True Life casting call, I Live Another Life on the Web. So she applied for it, and they accepted. In the course of that interview, she mentioned me as being a mentor to her and an encouragement to her to get out and start playing. So they started filming her and I talking in Second Life. And I had already had this trip to San Francisco planned in March, so MTV stuck around out there until I came out, and they did some filming of the two of us together and filmed some performances and conversations. And so I'm on MTV for 30 seconds.
Yay, MTV.
30 seconds.
30 seconds of fame.
Yes.
I guess that's more than a lot of us get anyway, so that's good.
So that was a long story, but that was how it happened.
So she did get over her stage fright eventually.
She is working through it, and she's doing an amazing job. She really is. It's all about believing in yourself and remembering that, you know, whether or not you connect with everyone at the venue, it doesn't matter. There's always one person, at least one person, that you make a connection with that makes it all worth it.
What is the difference between audience interaction in Second Life versus playing at a live gig in Atlanta or anywhere else?
Audience interaction in the real world is very loud. And it makes the musician feel like no one really cares that you're up there and what you're doing. And that's, I had to develop a really thick rhino skin because there are times that I get a little agitated when I feel like people aren't listening. But in Second Life, you can have a bunch of people talking at one time and having so many conversations. But the other thing that's neat about the Second Life audience interaction is that the whole audience can interact with. It's like one giant conversation. You have 30 to 40, 50 people all in the same conversation while the music is going on, making comments about the music or the song talking about their prim hair or something. Everybody is involved in it if it's
so,
in public chat.
I haven't actually gone into Second Life. I guess I've been kind of scared that it's like I barely have time for my first life, and so then the Second Life... You know, I just fear the time aspect of it more than anything else. But how does that work? Is it like a chat room, or is it...
It is. It's like a chat room with pretty people in it, or animals, or robots, or whatever. But yeah, it's a 3D interactive chat. It's chat supersized. That's the only way I can think of it. Yeah, it's a chat room supersized. But it's what's neat about it too is I don't have any other skills aside from playing music. I try to build things. I'm not a 3D modeler. I don't make textures. I can't make clothes or anything like that. Other people, clothing designers will use Second Life to test out new clothing designs that they're going to make in the real world, or architects will come in and design buildings that they plan on building in the real world. And so it's a very, very neat creative tool that a lot of people can use. And so my aspect of it is to market music. That's what I do in Second Life. But boy, I look at some of these artists and musicians that have other skills on top of that, whether it be web design or some other type of creative thing. I'm like, oh, I wish I could be like them, because I can't do... I can build a square, and I can put a texture on it with information about my show, and I can make it clickable, so if they touch it, it'll take them to another website or give them a landmark to where I'm playing. That's about it for me.
That's more than a lot of people would do.
It took a lot of time for me to learn how to do that.
Here's the aforementioned musical interlude. The first song you'll hear is called An Open Door from Grace's album River. It's about 4 minutes and 15 seconds long. And the second is called This Dream from the album Virtually Live. It's just under 3 minutes.
Words in my ear. Never did I envision. I can't believe it's for real, baby. So hold me, don't let me wake from this dream. Ooh. Carry me away in your arms, so strong and masculine. Oh, and fold them around me. Yeah. Ooh, 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 ooh. And hold me for a little while longer.
With the second half of my interview with musician Grace Buford, whose songs you just heard. If you've enjoyed this podcast so far, leave us a voicemail at 678-389-9441 and let us know. Also drop us a line if you just want to suggest someone we should interview in a future episode, or if you'd just like to chat.
How much time would you say you spend playing gigs outside of Second Life versus playing gigs in Second Life? And I know that you said they overlap some.
Sometimes,
so,
yeah. When I can get a good connection,
yeah,
they'll overlap. I play more in Second Life than I do in real life, and there are a number of reasons why. Gas prices.
Yeah.
It's getting too expensive for me to drive in town. I live out in the metro. I have been trying out near where I live to get bookings at restaurants, and nobody's interested in having live music. There are a lot of fees associated with having music there, which it's my understanding that the legalities of live performance are different, but people still get hosed all the time.
I know I lived in Knoxville, Tennessee when I went to college, and I know there were all sorts of arcane laws about live performance there that honestly were kind of keeping an otherwise burgeoning music
yes.
scene from coming up, because people, there just weren't that many places for people to play.
Right.
Locally, what kinds of things are you aware of from a legal standpoint that are limiting? Like,
well, I think it's just one of the main things is the fees associated with ASCAP and BMI and the RIAA coming down on people. You're probably familiar with it from the internet radio aspect of it. But when I do cover songs, when I cover someone else's songs, I'm terrible at remembering words, so I always mess things up. And I always change those songs enough where I give, and before I play it, I always give credit to the person who wrote the song.
Sure.
And then I'll play the song, or I'll do it right after. And that way people know that I'm not trying to lay claim to it as much. Most of the time people go, "She didn't write that, that's Simon and Garfunkel." You
know? I know.
It's like,
that's what I said 5 minutes ago.
Exactly. So, but I like to change them up and make them my own, because my idea, if you're covering somebody and you play it just like it is on the CD, why don't you just put in the
CD? Put the CD in, yeah.
I like to add my own spin on it, mm-hmm. which is what I tell my daughter to do, too. She's covering somebody else. Put your own rhythm in it.
Mention the RIAA, obviously a hot topic lately. What are your thoughts on intellectual property versus being able to freely cover things, distribute things, Creative Commons licenses, that kind of thing?
I'm still learning about all that.
Yeah.
Because what I'd like to know is how the independent artist who has no, you don't have a giant fan base that you can rely on that's, you know, devoted, you know, with millions of people devoted to your music. I probably have a fan base of maybe 600.
Yeah.
You know, one person at a time. And but how does the indie artist who doesn't have that backing really make money off of giving their stuff away? But I don't know. And I haven't tried to license any of my things, my music, for commercial, because I just don't know how commercial my music is. My music is more a listening room. Well, I don't know. I get kind of rowdy sometimes. But it just doesn't seem to me like it's something that I listen to and I would go, oh, that would be great to sell perfume for Macy's or whatever.
Or like, who was it? Up Montreal, for example, with their song in the Outback commercial.
Yes.
You know, Amber, my girlfriend's favorite song, you know, or favorite band, I should say, is Up Montreal. And she's been seeing them, like, her ex-husband knows one of the band members, and they were all together in Athens before Up Montreal was, like, even big.
Oh, that's so cool.
It's interesting to watch them now because they've gotten pretty big. They seem like almost on the verge of, you know, getting into Modest Mouse territory or something, you know, but
that's cool.
Anyway, back to
I just don't know how commercial my music is. My fan base is generally made up of people in their 30s, 40s, 50s. I mean, I'd reach a more mature audience. I had some college students drive down to Lowell when I was playing in the art gallery, and one of them was on Twitter. She heard about me coming up there on Twitter, and so she and her sister and a friend of theirs drove down from college, and they stood in the corner of the gallery and took pictures, and just they were just as sweet as they could be.
Might have seen those on Flickr.
Yes, yeah, you did see those on Flickr.
Yeah.
Yep. So I do have some people, and I think my daughter said that she told some of her friends at school about my music, and I had a number of hits on iTunes after that. So
that's good.
She's a good little PR.
Good
PR
representative.
Rep for me.
We were talking about how most of the fan base 30s, 40s, 50s. Is it the same in regular out real world space versus Second Life space? Is it also 30s, 40s, 50s in Second Life as well? Do you know?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, to the extent that I know.
Yeah.
I mean, I write music about. Well, sometimes it's kind of heavy emotional subject matter, and so it's a certain. I don't want to label myself. I mean, I'm not emo by any chance, by any means. But what? But yeah, I think so. It's, from what I understand, and looking at people that come to shows, the majority of them that I see, I think are in that age range, more mature listener. But there are some. I'm not labeling. There are some people that are younger that are mature listeners too. They have good taste. I was just trying to think of when I look out at people at real life shows. Oh, on the 19th of June, I'm playing at Sweetwater Brewing Company,
That
tends to have a younger crowd.
Yeah. I've been out there before, and it's usually 20s, 30s, early 30s. So yeah.
I played there. I played four songs opening up for my friend's band, and I sold four CDs that day.
That's good.
For $20 a piece. I'm like, they're not $20. Oh, just keep the change.
Sounds good to me.
I was like, ooh, okay, profit.
I love the Sweetwater Brewery because they give you tickets, and then sometimes they don't take the tickets.
Oh. Well, I'm a performer, so I get bracelet.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, kind of like this
kinda like
one.
That one, yeah.
I get a bracelet, but since I don't drink beer, I'm playing at a brewery and I don't drink beer.
Yeah.
They're giving me 10 bracelets to give away.
Nice.
So the first 10 people that come up to me and say, and introduce themselves and say they heard about my show on Twitter or MySpace or Second Life, and they let me know who they are, I will give them a bracelet. If they don't give me any of that information, then they don't get a bracelet. Because I have a lot of people that say that they've come to my shows and they've seen me, but they don't talk to me. I'm not scary. I'm a nice person, and I'm not threatening in any way, and they don't say hi, and that hurts my feelings. Because I'm all about interaction. So I want to know that people from the virtual and internet world are actually, I want to know that it's actually making a difference.
Yeah.
Me being in Second Life. So I was thinking about it, and I thought, is it really MySpace, Facebook, Twitter, Second Life, do these really have any effect on what I do? And if I'm sitting here spending all this time marketing, and no one comes, then why even do it?
Absolutely.
So I want to see that there's going to be some results. Now, I saw it up in Boston. I had people driving from Connecticut just to see me and meet me and listen to my music live and get pictures with me. And I was like, whoa. It was wild. But people down here in my own area won't come out. Am I really? Is it just that I'm around all the time?
I don't know. I mean, I would sort of be interested in like a case study on how people use Twitter in different regions and things, because it's kind of open to interpretation how you're supposed to use it. It's like you got 140 characters that some people use it to just dump links into. Some people use it as a little microblogging platform. Mm-hmm. Some people use it to keep in touch. You know, all manner of different things. And I would be interested to know if there are sort of like regional differences in how people use it, because people do imitate each other with their behavior.
Well, I wonder. I wonder if someone would fund a case study like that.
Yeah.
And let me travel to those areas, and they pay all my expenses, and let me play.
Yeah. I would be willing to write up a case study, because that would be a good gig. So you also teach music.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Well,
the Royal Us, because it's just me today.
I teach in-home private music lessons. Some of the lessons that I have, I got because I have friends that pay me to teach their kids. But then I also work with a company. If I could plug them, Allegro Music Lessons. And I am an instructor recruiter, as well as coordinator for lessons. So I find teachers that live close to the students and pair them up, and they get lessons. And I have a couple of students through that company as well. And so I've been teaching, I guess, 2 years. I've been teaching. And
do you teach guitar?
Guitar and piano. I teach guitar and piano. I can do some voice, but the majority of people calling in for voice lessons want to be the next American Idol.
Yeah.
I don't do that. I teach proper singing technique and breathing, and you know how not to destroy your voice. Of course, I don't always follow my own advice. That's part of being an adult. You can do that. I have a couple of piano students, a couple of guitar students. Some of my guitar students are, one of them is a mother and daughter. And so I'm teaching the daughter lead guitar and the mother rhythm guitar so they can play together. And then I keep saying they're going to be the next Judds. I have some great students.
Just, this may sound like a dumb question, it may be a dumb question, but it wouldn't be the first time. At what point does someone get from I cannot play guitar at all to wow, I feel like I can play guitar? Like, when does that light bulb go off? When does the basic feeling of proficiency hit? Is it different for a lot of people? I mean, sure, it's different for everybody, but...
Probably. I still don't feel like I can play guitar. there's just a lot... I listen to other people, and being that I'm self-taught, and I'm self-taught from the point of learning some chords and following a book. Mm-hmm. I'm always reading, mm-hmm. picking technique books and theory books. I'm very proficient on piano because I started taking piano at 4 years old. Mm-hmm. So I'm very proficient at piano. I'm very comfortable with teaching it. And guitar is... truck.
A lot of big-ass trucks out here.
Guitar is a little bit different. I'm a little less confident in the guitar. But I love to play it. Mm-hmm. My natural rhythm is kind of hyper, but I get bored playing the same thing, playing the same way all the time. So I'm constantly listening to music, talking with other highly skilled guitar players, watching, observing, asking questions, reading books. I'm always trying to better myself and grow, because as an artist, you keep doing the same thing all the time. I mean, at least for me, I get terribly bored.
Yeah,
terribly bored. So I got to keep things changing. If things don't change, then I lose it. I might as well turn into a slug.
All right, so is there anything else you'd like to mention, talk about before we wrap this up?
Yeah, I'm actually doing some traveling this summer. So we covered the Sweetwater Brewing Company on the 19th. Uh-huh. The end of the month, I'm going to be in Delaware. I'm trying to see if I can get... I'm going to be staying with my aunt and doing some music for her church, doing a concert at her church, and then leading worship on Sunday. I cannot remember the name of the church, but I will blog about it once I get it. And then, let's see, then I'm going to be going to Lowell, Massachusetts again in the end of July. I'll be there from the 25th through the 27th. Hopefully playing at the Lizard Lounge in Cambridge again on the 28th. But I'll be playing music in Lowell at the Counterpart Gallery, which I blogged about before when we did the opening. But I'm going to be playing at the gallery during the Lowell Folk Festival. So I couldn't get into the Folk Festival, so I'm doing my own thing again. So the streets are always packed, so I'm going to play music down there. Hopefully we'll have Second Life up on a screen and be broadcasting it, real time, virtual time. Then the end of August, I'm going to be back out in San Francisco. That's the plan. And beginning of September is the Second Life Community Convention in Tampa. And then this is the exciting local thing. You and Amber should get in on this. The Rock Goddess for Peace Festival, taking place September 20th and 21st at Lenny's Bar.
Okay, yeah.
That's put off, but yeah, Rock Goddess for Peace Festival, I think we have 40 bands, 40 acts playing over the course of 2 days. I would love to broadcast it over that 2 days and showcase the bands that come in and play and also the causes that we're raising funds for. I can drop you some more information about that, because it's going to all the bands are local to Atlanta. There's a chance that Mary Chapin Carpenter is going to be playing, and so it's just it's exciting. So that's my summer.
All right. And what's the website?
My website is gracebuford.com. Mm-hmm. But you can also, there's a link there to my MySpace page, my blog site. Mm-hmm. You can sign up to be a part of my street team and on my mailing list with Reverb Nation from there as well.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
The song you heard in this podcast was Flux by Drop Trio, available only on Magnatune.com.
Thanks for listening to Mostly ITP on the Georgia Podcast Network. Visit us at gapodcastnetwork.com. If you have a question, comment, or drunken rant, leave us a voicemail by calling 678-389-9441. Who knows, it might be featured in a podcast. You can also email us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com.